Truth on the Tracks you can catch every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on UCY.TV.
Yeah. Chat.
Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares. Nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it. It's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, know through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Isn't that an amazing song? Thanks again to Ponder and XL for hooking us up with that free music for the Anti-Media Radio. This is Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for coming back and joining us. I'm super happy to be alive and well and still here being able to decode the news for you. And we're going to keep doing this as long as we can, as long as it lasts, until they shut us down or until the anti-media goes out of business or until something cataclysmic happens. I don't know. We're going to keep going at it, though. Your continued support and listenership, whatever you want to call it, is very much appreciated. We're going to be having kind of a not much for a panel tonight, but I am going to be joined by my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. He's all up in the house. What's up, DB? How you doing, man?
Not too bad, Nick. Just chilling. I guess who are we running with tonight?
Looks like it's going to be you, me, and Manny Aguilar. What's up, Manny? You on the line, man?
Better believe it. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, pretty good.
What's up, Manny?
Yeah, what's up? How you doing? Shout out to Claire. Shout out to DB Schwartz. Shout out to Shannon Manning. Shout out to FM Gibson. And I definitely want to do a shout out to Nick. And with not last but least, my new friend. Shout out to my new Latino princess friend from Jalisco, Lily. So shout out to her too and stuff like that. And I'm ready to basically come back. I'm going to hit it hard on Saturday. Hope to see Nick there on basically the protest against Don Santo, because they're no different than Donald Trump. They're the same, you know, stuff like that. They're vicious. And they don't care about anybody else and stuff like that. And so it was really great out there. And I want to send a shout out to Michael Buell because he had to go to Venice or had to take him, and he got, you know, treated very well. First class, all the way, VIP, Dennis, if you want to. I recommend him 100% without a drink in the night and stuff like that. So that was really good. And then I also want to shout out to the Dreamer's mom that I really done a lot for them and stuff like that. And I feel that my conscience is clear because I'm doing it for the right reasons. So hello to the Dreamer's mom and to the supported veterans at the bunker. Thank you, Nick.
Manny, it was great seeing you Monday, and Manny came over and was in studio with us Monday for the radio, and then him and one of our mutual journalist friends, Michael Buell, who's a great live streamer for a lot of these protests. And Manny brought up the March Against Monsanto happening this Saturday worldwide, so anyone listening, I don't care where you're at, there's probably a march going on near you if you want to go out there and stand up against Monsanto and these big chemical corporations that are
you know, doing various things. I guess Monsanto is the easiest target because they're so corrupting with the government. You know, Michael Taylor, the guy at the FDA, Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court, former Monsanto employees. Very controversial practices. Their Roundup herbicide, which has been found by the World Health Organization to be probably carcinogenic. Various different things going on with Monsanto. And so, yeah, get out there Saturday. Support that. I may be out there at the one in San Diego. As many people probably know, we helped start the March Against Monsanto, the anti-media. That was a long time ago, years and years ago, and we kind of parted ways with the organization itself. But you know, the essential message there, you know, standing up against oligarchy, standing up against hegemonic farming practices, and it's our food, man. Everybody's eating food. Everybody has. There's a little bit that we could all kind of learn from. Hold on. We're getting a call at the office here. That's not the number to call in for the radio show. I'll give the number out in a few minutes. But anyway, you know, everybody has food to eat, you know, or everybody eats food, I should say. And therefore, Monsanto, in one way or another, pretty much affects everybody. Sorry for the interruption there.
It's La Migra.
Yeah, it's the trolls trying to call in and disrupt the radio show. It worked, but now we're back. Anyway, yeah, I mean, this Monsanto issue affects everybody. And, you know, we cover it pretty much all the time on the anti-media, anytime there's news. And there was a report that came out the other day, a really big report looking at safety of genetically modified foods. Many of the details there show that, you know, the GMO foods themselves aren't really bad for people, but it's the pesticides that are being used on these foods, which many of which are like glyphosate resistant, Roundup ready foods, seeds and stuff like that. That's the stuff that's really dangerous. You know, it leads to a higher use of these herbicides, and they're getting in everything. They're getting in the groundwater. They're getting into the air. They're getting into the rain. Even rain samples were tested positive for glyphosate. People in Europe, I mean, the urine is being tested positive. Breast milk in the United States tested positive for glyphosate. I mean, this stuff is getting in everything. Nobody's safe from it, and it's probably carcinogenic, quote unquote, so that's not a good thing. So I think that's one issue that I think a lot of people can agree on and stand together on, is this, you know, heavy use of this glyphosate pesticide.
And what's the original, you know, time bomb that particular poison does to insects? Isn't it that it just ruptures their intestines?
You know what? I'm not 100% sure. I mean, glyphosate is, you know, more or less a weed killer. But it has a bunch of effects on animal life as well. I don't know exactly what it does, but, you know, it does, you know, for human beings, it's, you know, probably carcinogenic. So
it's leading to all these stomach ailments that people overwhelmingly in countries that have heavy GMO in the food supply, they're starting to see these cancers that before were one in, you know, a couple hundred thousand people are now one in 10,000 people, you know, like pancreatic cancer and those types of cancers. It's all interrelated.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. And this stuff gets in everything, so, you know, it's causing various types of cancers and stuff like that, or at least helping.
I want to mention that Monsanto is not only doing it in the United States; they're doing it like in Tennessee. You know, they're the ones that created Agent Orange and stuff like that, Roundup, et cetera. And so we're also telling people that you know, that's affecting a lot of, you know, tornadoes from Tennessee and stuff like that, you know, and just no medical for them. So if they get sick, they're kind of like in bad shape and stuff like that. Because, I mean, they're making $7 for a whole day, 12, 13-hour days. Are you serious? $7 a day? Like,
and no restrooms.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just the break of lunch and that's it, you know? But no breaks in between, and that's kind of, you know, really sad. So anybody that understands, you know, what they're going through should be boycotting Driscoll, you know, and especially their strawberries and stuff like that. Driscoll is no better than Monsanto and stuff like that, and it's just really one of those things. Also, want to mention something that Nick just reminded me of. down there in San Diego, I've seen more migra along the 15 and everywhere else, more than CHPs, you know, and so creating all these raids and stuff like that. I mean, we were just, Michael Buell was just like, wow, dude, it's just, he actually, you know, covered it and stuff like that. That was pretty neat and all that, you know, and so I just said, oh my God, you know, and so, you know, I even saw this big dude, too, for a minute. I thought it was DB Shorts, you know, like my media.
Hey, they're testing out. They're testing it out down there, man, by the border where they can get away with it.
Yeah. Hey, what's your take on that, DB? On why is Obama not exercising the executive order and stopping these deportation and these raids? What's your opinion on that? I want to know that.
I really couldn't tell you because honestly, you'd think you would. It helps big business, so there's got to be some other pressure going against him. I can only imagine it's labor unions are just kicking the shit out of him in some other way, or some organized type of, you know, front like that.
Hey, Manny, we're having a hard time hearing you, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, he's going to be known for the president that has deported more people, you know, and it's really a tough thing and all
and
that,
it's,
you know,
ridiculous because he's an immigrant. I mean, the guy's the most hypocritical suit we've ever had in office.
When we look at like the conservative talking points, it's like we're living in the twilight zone. It's like, oh, Obama's opening up the borders and all these people through. It's like Obama's deported way more people than Bush ever did. And then the other talking point is, oh, Obama's, you know, deconstructing the military and he's soft on foreign policy. Obama started like 8, 9, I don't know, is it now 10 new wars? I mean, it's ridiculous, man. He's the most hawkish Democrat we've had in, you know, since Clinton.
And let's be honest about Obama. He has been letting in a ton of people and been deporting the exact people we need in this country, which are people that are working hard to provide for back home, not a bunch of people that are political dissidents that get here and hate the culture, dude.
Yeah, exactly, and all that, you know, so... And one of the things I did hear, and to wonder from the Dreamer's mom, is Obama, don't deport my mama, you know, because it's just one of those things. And we're waiting for them to hopefully get, you know, DAPA and DACA passed and stuff like that, because anybody in your show that's not familiar with a special visa called the U visa, protects women that are here undocumented. They go through domestic violence, because I don't think it's fair that a woman cannot call the police, but she'll be deported because, you know, after her husband beats her up, and he's gonna win because he's documented and she's not. I don't think that's fair. So I hope that they'll, you know, pass all these laws, the DAPA, DACA, so that women can get what they call the U visa, you know.
Yeah, and you know what a lot of people don't get about the immigration issue is that a lot of these people are refugees, man. They're coming because they're fleeing the drug war. I just saw an article today about people that are like leaving Central America, man, and like, you know, they're getting out because their lives are in danger because of the drug war down there, man.
Those are the immigrants that want to come here legally if we would just give them some kind of a path.
Yeah, if it was easier, man. It's like, dude, you're about to get killed in your home. You're not going to sit around and wait 2 years to try to, you know, go about it legally to try to, like, preserve your life, man. People, you know, it's survival instincts is what's driving a lot of the quote-unquote illegal immigration. You know what I mean? People just trying to not die, you know, and can you blame them? And a lot of it stems back to U.S. policies, dude, the drug war, the Monroe Doctrine, our foreign policy meddling over there in Central and South America. You know, people are trying to get out because we've destabilized those regions to prop up, you know, corporate pseudo dictatorships over there, dude. And it's just, you know, it's not good.
And it's coming home to roost because look what's going on now. I mean, the Nevada Convention is a perfect example of that. That police state, that mentality, that whole us against our citizens, that's coming home.
Yeah, great.
Talking about the problems that we have too, I want to mention that Nick mentioned it, and it's just in the battle with especially the women that I was leading the pack in the movement anyway, it's really right. They're saying they're fed up with what they did down there in Brazil. You know, that woman got elected by the people, and they threw her out and stuff like that, and she needs to be, you know, she needs to be given her position back as president of Brazil.
Yeah, very, very messed up stuff going on in Brazil right now. Very bad timing too, with the Olympics coming up, and you know all that.
Well, it's perfect timing though for the people that pulled this off.
Yeah, true. I want to shift gears a little bit here and talk about our intro meme or our intro image, because I'm sure a lot of people listening tonight are listening in because they saw that. And it goes back to this obituary that came out a couple days ago, May 15th. This woman died over, where was it? I don't know where it's at. anyway, this woman died, and then her son put in the obituary, he put, faced with the prospect of voting for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, Marianne Nolan of Richmond, okay, it's Virginia, Marianne Nolan of Richmond chose instead to pass into the eternal love of God on Sunday, May 15, 2016, at the age of 68. And I just found this absolutely hilarious, but at the same time, like, very telling. And this guy kind of stirred up a national conversation here, just about the election. And I was talking to some people today. We're covering a story on the Anti-Media tomorrow regarding a recent poll. And man, a lot of people are like, you know what, if it's Trump, Hillary, I'm ready to vote third party. I think I saw that like 60 something percent of people in a poll said that they'd be willing to consider a third party candidate over Trump or Hillary. So that's a really interesting prospect. And it really does show the rejection now of this two-party system, right?
Well, we need the third party, man. We need a progressive party. We have to have one.
Yeah, and you know, I think the only hope here is for someone to build up an alliance between like the progressive and the libertarian leaning people. And that's kind of what Ralph Nader has been talking about recently, is that there needs to be like a real left and a real right alliance, you know, because I think libertarian vein of thought is like the true right wing, and the progressive, like the you know, progressive socialism is like the true left wing. And I think that the only way to get a viable third party together is to build some kind of alliance between these two groups, maybe a president and a VP ticket between like Jill Stein and Gary Johnson or something like that, to really build some kind of united coalition between people that are really genuinely anti-establishment, that may disagree on economics and other things, but are willing to put their differences aside to kind of make a crack at the status quo. And maybe that is something that could happen maybe this election or next election. I think that's a real possibility. And I think that would, you know, really broaden out the discussion. If anybody watched those third party debates recently, I think it was hosted on RT or something like that. I mean, man, you watch that debate, and then there was a libertarian debate as well. They talk about real issues, man. It's not this crap that you see in these two party debates where it's the Republicans figuring out who could bomb more people and who can torture more people and who could start another war. And then, you know, on the other end of the spectrum where it's the Democrats about, you know, who can grow the government bigger and who can be the bigger nanny statist. You know, these third party debates really break through and get down to the nitty gritty when it comes to policy and to philosophies and things like that. And it's much more enlightening to watch that stuff than to watch these demagogues on the Republican and Democratic side.
It begs also, I just wanted to tie in quickly kind of a movement that's, you know, been a long time coming, which is, you know, it ties in the fact that there's tons more independent voters than any of the other two parties, and more of the two parties combined, really. I believe it's 46% of the population is independent or categorizes themselves as that. So I just wanted to bring up a website, opentheprimary.org. It's going to be spearheading California, but it's going to be all the states where just eventually they need to just all be open for anybody to vote for anybody. As long as you're a legitimate party, your name should be on that ballot and anybody should be able to vote for you.
Yeah, dude. And the other thing is that it's really questionable legal-wise. The fact that most of these electoral things are publicly funded by the taxpayer, and then the taxpayers are excluded from participating. I mean, in these closed primaries, Like New York, for instance, where...
Or even California is, although it's really not.
It's like a... It's like a semi...
Yeah, semi.
It's a top two type of system.
Which is still... I mean, it's it might as well just be clamp closed because there's so many people that are American independent. There's like 4 million of them in California. And there's tons and tons and tons of people that are just no party preference. They get no... They get nobody if they're no party preference. So it's like, what the hell?
Exactly. So if you're one of these people that is like an independent, you know, and many of the people voting for Trump and Bernie Sanders are independents, you know, and you're an independent and you're registered independent in California in the coming primary, you're not going to be able to cast your vote for any of those candidates. If you're like, oh, I think Sanders has the best ideas. And you're an independent. Well, too bad. You don't get to have your say.
But you get no say.
They have no problem taking your money and financing these elections with your money, and then not letting you participate in them. It's ridiculous, man. It's crazy. It's insane. I mean, this is taxation without representation. You want to get any more blatant than that? I mean, that's as blatant as it gets. You know,
pretty much. If you have no voice, you have no choice.
Yeah, we're going to be covering this poll tomorrow. It's going to be a really interesting article about, you know, how I think we're at basically a record level of people that are ready to accept or embrace a third party challenge to the two candidates this year. Because, I mean, let's face it, both Trump and Hillary Clinton are overwhelmingly unfavorable. I mean, they're both very – people just, you know, don't like them. I think Trump has a much more – solidified base, a small base of people that really, really like him. Hillary Clinton's voters, we talked about this last show, they're not people that are out there like, yeah, Hillary, like, we're going to vote for you because we believe in you. They're like,
they're reluctant.
You know what? Yeah, they're literally, they're just like, you know what? I'm a lifelong Democrat. I work for, you know, the federal government, and Hillary Clinton is better than Donald Trump. That's the way I see it. And I don't want to vote for her, but hell, you know, better than Trump. And that,
and not even better.
Those are the people supporting Hillary Clinton. That's their mindset. It's not like, yeah, I believe in this woman. It's like, damn it, I got to vote for her because if not, it's Trump.
It's not even like it's better. It's like, at least it's the devil we know. That's how they're looking at it. Like, everybody I've ever talked to about Hillary, well, at least she'll be the first woman. That's the thing. At least she'll be the first woman president. That's the most positive thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. That's like voting for Hitler because he'd be the first fascist. You know, nothing against women at all. I mean, I think me and Manny were actually talking about this on Monday night after the show. We were like, man, if the world was run by women, it probably wouldn't be so bad as it is right now. But Hillary Clinton is not the one that we need to, you know, just vote for just because she's a woman. I mean, she is a very corrupt, very deceitful, very heartless when it comes to just the amount of blood on her hands. I mean, she's got more kills on the first page of her rap sheet than Chris Kyle does, man. I mean,
let's be real about it, and let's put it this way. Hillary would have no problem fighting Russia, and that would come back home.
I mean, yeah. I mean, she's already stated pretty openly that she wants a no-fly zone in Syria, which it would trigger Russia. It would force Russia's hand to do something. She's been very, very vocal against the Iranians, which is another close ally of the Russians, which would also force the Russians' hand to do something. And then you got Obama, the anti-war activist candidate over here, pushing the limit, pushing the envelope with China over there, putting our ships right up next to their islands and stuff. I know they're disputed islands and stuff like that, but come on, dude. Do we really need to be doing that right now? I mean, it's crazy. The TPP is going through. They just slapped a huge tariff on the Chinese steel manufacturers and stuff. I mean, the economic war with China, I mean, it's a new Cold War, but it's economic. It's real. It's on. It's going right now.
And really, like, if you get into researching what's been going on with our military, we've basically been sold out to defense contractors who take billions and billions and billions of dollars and underperform and underdeliver. And it's been that way for so long that now we have pretty much parity. In other words, we really don't have an advantage. And all of our high-tech stuff that we have can all be countered with EMP stuff. So whatever we think we're doing, it's not going to work the way we think it is. We're just agitating basically the two other supposed superpowers And I don't know, I look around me and see everyday people in our society and think, man, if we ever actually had a war, I don't think we're going to fare too good.
I don't think the world would fare too well. You know, there's just too.
But we're very soft at this point.
Yeah, that's true. But and you know, there's just so many super weapons out there now. I mean, just the amount of nuclear weapons held only by the U.S. and Russia are just it's enough to destroy the world like a bunch of times over. And you know,
we'd fare particularly horribly if the grid collapsed here, though. You know what I mean? Like no one grows food.
No one grows food, man. Americans are very spoiled with our stuff, you know, and we depend on the supply chain of huge multinational corporations, which depend on a very centralized distribution system and a handful of you know, mega corporate farms and stuff, back to the whole Monsanto issue. And Monsanto helps exacerbate that problem by doing what they do with those expensive seeds and all that. And, you know, most of Monsanto's customers are these huge mega farms. You know, the American food system is overly centralized. The American energy system is overly centralized. You know, our as you mentioned, DB, we're no longer competitive at the on military spending because our money is being wasted, dude. I mean, if there was legitimate competition for these contracts and like all these contractor companies had to compete for the contracts and make. You know,
Nick,
quality products. I mean, that'd be a different story. But we're giving trillions of dollars to build like that one, the F-35 jet.
Yeah,
it's already costed over $1 trillion, and it's not even operational yet. You know, just, and that's a lot of money.
All people have to think about for the military is how many aircraft carriers we have, how much they cost to maintain, and how we couldn't use them in a real war against an actual power. They're only good for fighting countries that basically have no air force. I mean, just think about that.
And those are the countries that we've been fighting for a long time, but that could change with Hillary Clinton.
So we have all that money and things that can be sunk by like a mini sub, and then we're done.
Yeah, man. Not good. Not a good scenario. You know, and we've grown bloated and we're not agile, you know, and just plenty of things that are, you know, could go wrong, dude, and we don't need a candidate that's going to go out there and be flexing the empire like Obama's been doing. I mean, he picked up where Bush left off and made it worse. And Clinton will probably, you know, if you're a student of history, if you look at any of her track record, all the things that she's done, she's supported, Clinton's going to come in and make things a lot worse. And by the way, Trump talks for the most part. But, you know, knowing Trump, he changes positions like every other day. But, you know, judging by a lot of his rhetoric and then the people that he's now surrounding himself with, which includes a bunch of neocons, you know, Trump will probably also make things worse. The only thing that is like slightly better about Trump than Hillary is that it's not guaranteed to be worse. It's just most likely that it's going to be worse. And that's not
– it's going to be a different kind of worse.
Yeah, and that's why so many people are now identifying with this idea that hey, maybe we do need third parties and maybe we do need more than just two options, is because you know they realize that Hillary's a bad option and Trump is most likely a bad option. So hey, maybe it's time for maybe a good option for once.
It's just a party with no corporate funding. That's it. In its charter, it will state will not accept any donations from any corporation or company, only from individuals. Done.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. We're going to have a special guest on to talk a little bit about some money in politics, term limits, and things like that. We'll introduce her when she calls in. I want to cover a few more stories here because we've been doing some really good stories on the antimedia.org. Hopefully everybody checks up on the website every day. Because of the Facebook algorithm, it's not reliable. They're changing it every couple months, and they're suppressing news stories. That the trending topics were in the news recently about how they're kind of censoring that. So make sure you check out our site, theantimedia.org, a couple times a day to make sure you can see all the stuff that we're putting out there. And then sign up for our newsletter. You can sign up on the homepage there. We got a newsletter that we send out every Thursday. And we include like our top five stories or the top five stories that we think that you should definitely see. Because, I mean, yeah, there's stuff on the site that you're not going to want to read or you don't agree with, or, you know, opinions that are maybe controversial or whatever. But, you know, make sure you check the site because you don't want to miss this stuff. And I'm telling you, Facebook may give you like 10% of our posts. So, you know, make sure you check up on that. Top story of the day is a counter narrative here. And the title is Mad About Rigged Elections. Mainstream media says you are the problem, and I'm sure you guys have noticed this, DB. I'm sure you've seen it. Ever since Nevada, the Nevada convention, Democratic convention on Saturday, the media has been taking aim at Bernie Sanders supporters and basically saying, hey, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters are a bunch of thugs. They're violent. They're a mob. They're a cult. I mean, they've been called a bunch of different things. Newsweek said the title of their article, Get Control, Senator Sanders, or Get Out. Basically, he's saying, hey, tell your supporters not to be pissed off that your votes are being stolen or that the elections are being stolen from you. Or, and if you can't do that, then just drop out of the race. That's from Newsweek. New York Times is pointing out that there's death threats being thrown around at people because they're upset about the election. The Sacramento Bee. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I played the video clip last episode or last show. But basically what's going on here is that people are, you know, especially in the Bernie Sanders camp, and then a lot of people were in the Trump camp too, but now that he's wrapped it up, that's kind of quieted down. But people in the Bernie Sanders camp are kind of up in arms about the rigging of the electoral process. And
you gotta be.
Yeah, and you do. But now the media, like pretty much in the media, is like now formed a chorus, and they're all railing against the Bernie Sanders supporters, and they're saying, "Hey, Bernie Sanders, you need to tell your supporters, or you need to apologize for your supporters."
I think they're getting a little scared.
Yeah, they are, and that's why the media is coming out so strongly. And like, you know, another New York Times headline is "Pressure Mounts on Bernie Sanders." To get control of his supporters and stuff. I'll tell you what, man, these guys, you know, and like I said, I'm not a Bernie Sanders supporter. I disagree with a lot of his policies and stuff, but his supporters.
But if someone's going to have to run this country, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he's better than Trump, and he's better than.
he'd actually probably be pretty good.
You know, but, and that's why he's getting undermined at the electoral level, because he wouldn't be as bad as Trump or Hillary. You know, but his people are definitely on the activist side of the equation here. But when you come into the when you talk about the political spectrum, they care about the environment, and they're more like justice oriented people. And I think they're very valuable. I think the Bernie Sanders camp, the people that are there supporting him, are very valuable when it comes to forming what I hope to be alliances in the future. Like I said, between the real progressives and the real libertarians to form some kind of coalition, pushing forward with a third party run, or, you know, at least something that can change the status quo. And, you know, these people aren't going to go quietly. I know they're not going to. I've seen the same thing happen in 2012 with the Ron Paul people, albeit it was a much, much, much smaller group.
You didn't really have the youth too much.
Much smaller group of people with Ron Paul. The Bernie Sanders crowd is way bigger, and they're not going to go quietly, man. They're going to cause some disruptions, and I'm thinking that, you know, even though Bernie Sanders is probably going to lose, they're going to do something, and it's going to change the status quo, and that's my hope.
Yeah, there'll be a split possibly in Philadelphia. I mean, the only thing is the superdelegates or whatever have it. Maybe we'll have it in their hands, where they can, you know, make it a contested, and then they'll let them in, but. Other than that, they're just going to split off the youth. They're just going to split everybody off under, like, probably, honestly, like, late 40s. Because at this point, and it's a lot of 50s, 60s, and 70s, I mean, it's not really a generational thing. It's literally going to be this cutoff where people are going to be like, I will never, ever, ever support the DNC ever again because of this whole thing.
Yeah, and it's already happening.
It's a huge percentage. It's like got to be like 30-40%.
The Bernie or bust crowd is getting bigger by the day with more and more of these. You know, the thing in Nevada, dude, it was a big hoax. And, you know, the media has been defending it. But, you know, from the stuff that I saw, the video on the ground.
It was the mafia.
People actually there, you know, Sanders got a raw deal. And, you know, people are holding out hope for the superdelegates, but, you know, I hate to say it, but most of these superdelegates are either political insiders, lobbyists, or, you know, part of the status quo. I mean, they're going to elect Hillary Clinton. You know, that's what they're...
Unless they get pressured and they feel scared somehow.
Unless it's a big-time pressuring. which, you know, I guess, you know, you never know. It could happen.
Yeah, if thousands of people, like, just kept calling them, they'd get freaked out.
Yeah, so, I mean, this media narrative, it tells you that they're kind of scared. I think you hit it on the head there, DB. They're pretty afraid of what's going on with the Bernie camp.
And it's the Trump camp, too. I mean, it really is. It's just whoever's dissatisfied with the status quo, which is at least 50% of the population, if not more.
Yeah, and, you know, if you look at around the world, we've got another article up today on the anti-media about Iceland, and this is pretty cool. They've got a political party in Iceland called the Pirate Party. And part, you know, the main pillars of their platform is internet freedom, freedom of speech, drug decriminalization, and promoting like true democracy. This is now the largest political party in Iceland. Now, yeah, Iceland's a small country and stuff, but it is kind of indicative of what's going on around the world. People are getting fed up with the status quo, man, whether it's Iceland, Europe, UK, United States, Latin America. I mean, people are tired of it, dude. They're getting tired of it.
At least here, if we all rose up politically and then they just disregarded it and then people took to the streets and blocked commerce and they brought in the National Guard or something or a private army, if the actual military and vets came out in force, I mean, yeah, there's possibility for something bad to happen, but there could just be a bloodless coup d'etat, a people's coup d'etat.
Yeah, man.
It could happen because we're armed and we're many. And there's still brave people here.
Dude, you know, this election tells you that, dude. This election tells you that people are done with it, bro. They're going to do something soon.
What are we going to do? Let ourselves slide into a third world country when really we should be leading the whole world up into, like, space?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard to say how it's going to play out. You know, no one knows. I mean, they've got plans in place. The agenda is already there. I mean, Hillary Clinton is supposed to be the nominee. Trump wasn't supposed to be the nominee. I mean, so, you know, things are not going according to plan, dude. So that's good.
Should be Sanders Trump, and let's just get this done with.
Yeah, for real. top story on the antimedia.org yesterday, a preview of the 28 pages. And now this is getting interesting. We're still trying to figure out what's really going on here. Is this a big distraction? Are they deflecting the 9/11 story? But a declassified document came out yesterday regarding Saudi Arabia and their role in 9/11. And mainly what this report did was question why they weren't pursuing a bunch of this info that they had on Saudi Arabian ties to 9/11. And so very, very indicative. I also saw something, we talked about it briefly on the last show, about after 9/11, the Saudi Arabian holdings in U.S. Treasuries exploded to like huge levels, and it's been rising exponentially ever since.
You know what else went up a lot, Nick? Ethanol production. Because I guess they're getting ready for any kind of a boycott Saudi Arabia might try to pull.
Interesting. Interesting, man. Yeah, and you know, alternative energy has been growing in leaps and bounds and stuff like that. I mean, oil, it's only a matter of time before oil becomes obsolete. And there's been a bunch of projections regarding sustainable energy and stuff, and the progress has been outperforming all these projections and stuff like that. So, you know, the world could become almost fossil fuel free in the next couple decades, dude.
We probably could. And how long do you think if we really had to? 5 years if there was a mandate?
Yep. 5, 10
you
years.
Know?
You know, and I think that that's going to really change the, you know, world order. It's going to change the petrodollar. It's going to change the way we look at resources. You know, and the most valuable land will be the stuff that gets the most sunshine and stuff like that, not the stuff that has the most oil in it. You know,
like Arizona?
Yeah, Arizona.
So we're going to be rich.
And then the Sahara Desert and stuff like that. I've seen plenty of posts that show how small of like solar arrays would have to be in the Sahara Desert to power, give the whole world.
Oh, yeah.
Gee, it's so tiny comparatively, yeah. You know, and think about what we're doing. I mean, Shell just started, just had another oil spill. They dumped like, what was it, 90,000 barrels of oil in the Gulf again? I mean,
so what you're telling me is we could, in the middle of the Gobi Desert or Sahara, put in this huge array and then use these towers made by this guy named Tesla to wirelessly beam energy all over the planet forever for free?
It'd be nice, right? It would be nice. Decentralized energy, you know, energy that's not super, you know, intensive against the environment and all that kind of stuff. It would be kind of a utopia, right? Get everybody energy all around the world so all these people in the third world can 3D print and get their own stuff going and, man, it
would be robots.
But you know what? If we do that stuff and we do open source and we do, you know, unfettered access to electricity and open source technology, well, then who's going to get rich? Or, you know, not just rich, but who's going to get extremely rich? And that's the problem, dude, is that, like, all these monopolists out there and hegemonic thinkers, they want to monopolize on all these resources and all this technology and all this stuff, and they want to just make themselves rich, and they purchase their politicians to keep enforcing their monopolies. And on that note, I want to bring in our special guest tonight. Victoria Steele is joining us from the organization Term Limits for U.S. Congress Political Action Committee, and she's the national assistant national director. Victoria, are you on the line with us?
I sure am.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for joining us. So you work with an organization that is trying to, I guess, overall get corruption out of the system, right?
That's our ultimate goal. First step, of course, is putting term limits on U.S. Congress. And if anybody's paying attention to what's going on in D.C., you know that the people that have been in there 20, 30, 40, even 50 years, they're not there representing us. They're representing the special interest groups, the lobbies that are lining their pockets, funding their campaigns. They vote the way these organizations and companies want them to vote, not the way that the people who elected them want them to vote.
It goes back to that no taxation without representation thing. And I actually wrote an article on this last week or 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. But, you know, taxation without representation, it's back, and it's worse than ever. I mean, the colonists back in the old days before the Revolution, I mean, they were being taxed at a much lower rate than people in the United States are right now. And the issue at hand is that many, many Americans now, as of this year, I think a lot of people are starting to realize, oh, crap, maybe we aren't being represented anymore. But, you know, now we're paying a much higher rate in taxes and stuff like that, and we're not being represented at all. In fact, a Princeton University study basically said the United States has become an oligarchy because of these lifetime politicians and because of the special interests. And like 90% of the policy decisions in the United States are made in favor of the extremely wealthy, and only 10% of the policy decisions are made on behalf of the public.
That's absolutely correct, and we've actually discussed that Princeton study on our Facebook page quite recently, actually. So, you know, not saying anything we're not well aware of. Unfortunately, you know, our biggest obstacle is, you know, people have become apathetic. They have gotten to the point, it's like, okay, well, my voice doesn't matter. Why should I bother? Or those who still do actually bother to go out and vote for their senators and their House representatives, they're just voting based on the name that they recognize or whoever has the most and flashiest commercials. Or they vote, you know, straight party line. They don't pay attention to who they're voting for. Everybody's Republican, that's who I'm voting for. Everybody's Democrat, that's who I'm voting for. Unfortunately, it's gotten to the point that we're at critical mass. Drastic times call for drastic measures, and that's where we come in. And we're fighting an uphill battle because we're having to go through a process that has never been done. You know, we all know that Congress will never limit themselves.
So tell us a little bit about term limits for U.S. Congress PAC.
Okay, what we are doing is we are actually working to get an amendment convention called Through the States, which, you know, you'll hear people call it a convention of states or a heaven forbid, a con-con. You know, and they freak out when we say that's what we're doing to amend the Constitution. I want to address that up front because I'm sure some of your listeners are going, oh, no, not these people. We're not opening the Constitution to be changed completely. This process only allows for the proposing of amendments to the Constitution. It's not going to touch the Articles of the Constitution. It's not going to touch the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment. This process, number one, 34 states have to agree on a topic for the convention to be called. Then it still has to go through the same ratification process. 38 states have to agree on any proposed amendment. So it's a fairly safe process. Term limits is very neutral. We are a nonpartisan organization. I want to put that up there. We don't lean left. We don't lean right. We're very, very particular about that. We are actively petitioning in all 50 states right now. Those petitions will go to each state legislature requesting that they vote yes on a referendum to call that convention. Right now, we have one state. We have Florida.
Well, hey, that's a start. One state's a pretty good start. You know, Florida's a big state.
Florida's a big state. One thing I do want to point out, there are other organizations out there. I'm sure you've heard of Convention of States Project. We are different than them. We are a single topic, term limits only. Convention of States does have a package deal that they're working on that is a little more right-leaning than we're comfortable with. As a nonpartisan organization, term limits is part of it, but their package is all or nothing. They want their whole package or nothing. We think that that's not feasible. You have to stay middle of the road. We are working limited with an organization, U.S. Term Limits. They are they've actually been around for about 25 years. They are the organization that actually got a lot of term limits set at the state level. I know they were effective where I live in Arizona personally. You know, we now have term limits because of their initiatives. They have the contacts at the state level. We have boots on the ground. We have people out in the community working on this.
Yeah, and term limits, you know, it's a pretty broad spectrum issue. I know I've heard people in the Republican Party, like Rand Paul, pushing for term limits, and I've heard people on, you know, in the Democratic side of things pushing for term limits. It's a pretty universal idea that it's common sense. I mean, we already have it for the presidents. We know, like, well, we don't want a lifetime president. We don't want a dictator, right? But
exactly.
But then on the other hand, it's like, well, you know, the Congress people, which arguably is more powerful than the presidency, have no term limits. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, you mentioned an oligarchy, and I know I just butchered that word. I always do. So that is exactly, in reality, what we have. Even though we are, on paper, still, you know, a constitutional republic, in reality, the way things are run, it's run by those 535 people in D.C., and we get no say. We really don't. Even in 2014, of the incumbents that ran in Congress, 56% ran unopposed in their primaries. There's no choice. You know, there was no choice for 56% of, you know, Americans to choose their representative. They had no choice. And then 96% of incumbents that ran in 2014 were reelected. And this was at a time when their approval rating was at an abysmal 11 to 14% during the election cycle. Yet 96%.
It's crazy. I mean, the statistics just line up.
They don't need to actually run off against anyone anymore.
No, they don't. And, you know, one piece of information that just recently came out and came to light. Did you realize that your senators, your representatives are required by their party, if they're Republican or Democrat, to spend at least 30 hours a week working on campaign funding, making phone calls to get funding for their campaigns?
I heard about that. That's crazy. I mean, and you know, these guys don't, I bet most of them don't even work 40 hour weeks. So they're spending the majority of their time fundraising rather than doing the bidding of the public who they supposedly represent. It's ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous. And that's why we're here. That's why we're doing what we're doing. We've been around, we started, our national director, Bob Reed, and he actually started it. I came on about a month later to help him, and it's kind of snowballed from there. Almost 3 years ago, we've been actively petitioning. The 26th of this month, it'll be 2 years that we've been out collecting signatures. It's slow going, though, because as I said when I reached out to you guys earlier today, mainstream media pretends that we don't exist. We've reached out to them. They don't want anything to do with us because they're owned by the same people that own Congress. They don't want things to change. They like having somebody who's been in office 30, 40 years that they own that vote. So we can't get the airtime. We can't get in front of the American people except through social media, our website, and I'm actively reaching out to organizations like yours. You know, this is how we're grassroots. We're all volunteer, and this is how we're going to have to do it, is through, you know, independently owned media.
Exactly. And it's become a force to be reckoned with, I think.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the independent media outlets, regardless of, you know, what your central message is, and I've worked with media on both sides of the aisle, you know, people who are, you know, news programs that are run by, you know, very strict conservatives, others that are run by liberals, some that are in the middle. Like I said, we're nonpartisan. I want to reach everybody in America. What our hope is in talking to you and talking to your listeners is that they will go to our website, and our website is termlimitsforuscongress.com. Go sign our petition. That is your voice in this. This is never going to go to a ballot. This is not something, I think there's maybe two states that have that option of this piece of legislature going on a ballot. The rest of the states, this is strictly going through the House and the Senate in your state. Our petition is your voice. This is your way to tell your state legislatures that you want them to make this call. You want this convention to happen. You support term limits.
Awesome. I hope people go out and check this out, because this is something that's very common sense, and you know, it's a very neutral issue. You know, I think a lot of people throughout the spectrum, even anarchists and libertarians, can kind of get behind this. Because we don't need five-time politicians. We need civil servants, people that actually want to get up there and do something and help people out or do the right thing. Like, you know, this system was originally set up in theory to like promote that kind of idea and kind of have like part-time legislators that were, you know, had a regular life too, and they did that just to, you know, to try to make a difference. And now we've got these guys up there making careers, and once they finally leave politics, they wind up going into lobbying, you know, and making millions of dollars doing that and stuff. It's ridiculous. We've come so far away from the ideas that were set out at the beginning of the founding of the United States. And maybe it was never, you know, maybe it was never perfect to begin with, but it's drifted far, so far away from what the idealists that set this thing up had envisioned.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, them becoming lobbyists. Hopefully, by them not being in office as long, you know, what we're proposing, and this is not set in stone yet, this is what we would like to see happen. Of course, what happens at the convention is kind of you know, unless we can manage to get some of our people into that convention of delegates, kind of out of our hands. But what we are hoping for is 12-year lifetime limit on Congress. That is whether they're in the House or the Senate or a combination thereof, 12 years maximum. If any election would put them over that 12 years, they would be ineligible to run for office. So if you have somebody who spent 8 years in the House and they go, ooh, I want to go over to the Senate. No, sorry, that'll put you, you know, 14 years. Too bad, so sad, not going to happen. You know, we're hoping that that gives them, it will give them more than enough time to get in, do something good, get out, go home, go back to your career that you had before you came to Congress. It's supposed to be a service. This was never intended to be a career. Our founding fathers, they didn't stay in D.C. They came in, you know, did their duty, and they went home. That's what we're hoping to get back to.
Yeah, that's what we need. Like John Adams. Huge fan of John Adams.
Just push an agenda and get the hell out.
Exactly. It's like, you know, have a couple of items that you really are passionate about. Get those done and go home. Go back to the people who put you there and go back as a hero who say, and say, yes, I got this done. You know, get back to what our founding fathers envisioned for our nation, which was a balanced system. And you mentioned earlier, Congress has the power. You know, something that we just put up on our Facebook page today was an image with the current three top candidates, Trump, Sanders, and Clinton. And it very clearly states, you know, these people are out there making you promises. Here's the truth. Congress has the power and Congress is corrupt. And it doesn't matter who gets put in the White House. Without congressional support, all of their promises are just fluff. They're air.
Right on, girlfriend.
That's we got to have a vote out the incumbents push.
That's you know what? Here's the thing. I wish voting worked. My kids wish voting worked because I spend 10 to 14 hours a day for the last 3 years on this. My kids are better versed on the constitutional process than most adults at this point. Voting does not work the way it's supposed to. I wish it did. But on exit polls, people were asked, you know, why did they vote for who they voted for? 80% of people who vote have admittedly stated that they vote based on name recognition, media presence, or party. That's not the way it's supposed to be. So,
yeah.
Well, we don't have an educated voter base.
You know, immigrants like myself that become U.S. citizens know the Constitution very well because we have no choice but to study to pass it, you know. We got to know it all and stuff like that. And also, like Jesse Jackson said, there's no activists in the White House. We need activists in the White House also to get things done, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get people every day. Somebody's like, well, we need to educate the voters. Okay. You know, over the last 50 or 60 years, there have been dozens of voter education initiatives. And guess what? They've all failed. You might get, you know, I can remember when I was in high school, the big one was Rock the Vote to get, you know, younger people out voting and paying attention. That lasted, what, a year? Maybe two? I know I've been...
Yeah, and Puff Daddy recently, he was one of the guys behind the Voter Die campaign. And he came out recently, I think last year, and he's like, you know what? Voting's a scam. It was pretty funny. But you know what? I mean,
you know, and
it's really tough. And, you know, people, I mean, Trump's a good example here. You know, demagogues can get elected democratically sometimes too. And that's why it's another important reason to put term limits so that they get the hell out after they do their damage. Thank you for calling.